So usually we kind of follow the readings of each day. Today's Tuesday. Typically, I would have learned with you a piece of Shlishi. The thing is that the third reading of Parshas Yisro really is a continuation of the second reading. It's the rest of the story with Yitro. He has advice. Moses says, in great humility, whatever God says, I'll do. God says, it's a good idea. Moshe Rabbeinu follows, implements to the best of his ability.
Okay.
And then the Torah returns to the historical narrative before the episode with Yisro. We kind of interjected with the episode of Yisro, and we talked about this yesterday as to why that might have been. And now we return to God offering the Torah first to the Edomites, to the Ishmaelites, as the Medrash says, and then Almighty God comes to the Jewish people. So today we open with the fourth reading, the narrative of Matan Torah. Chapter 19. Exodus chapter 19. B'chodesh HaShlishi, on the third month, Letzeis B'nei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim, from the Jewish people's going out of Mitzrayim, Vayoyim Hazeh, on this day, Bo Midbar Sinai. So this is a lot of fanfare, but not that much information. Emphasis that it was the third month from their going out of Egypt. On this day, they came to Mount Sinai. So with regard to the Torah's introduction of the Matan Torah narrative, with an emphasis on B'chodesh HaShlishi, it was the third month. We have some very interesting commentary. For example, there's a Psikta de Rav Kahana, which is from the writings of our sages, obviously, where Rav Kahana collected different teachings of the Talmudic genre. Rav Kahana says that the Jewish people were Balei Mumin, that they were blemished individuals because of the terrible servitude and the persecution that they endured. So the Rav Kahana says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yis'adnu Bonai Gimel Chadoshim, let my children kind of convalesce. Let them enjoy for 3 months. Let them be recuperating by drinking the water of the miraculous well, by eating the miraculous food known as the manna. And even the slav, even that quail-like bird that was sent. And only after they'll enjoy a good diet, eating well, eating this miraculous sustenance, and then they'll come back to themselves, then yiyu mekablum es haTorah, then they'll be able to get the Torah. So the Balei HaTosfos kind of build on these words of Rav Kahana. And in the teachings of the Balei HaTosfos, it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu found the Jewish people in a weakened state. The language is toshei koyach. And as such, because they were in a weakened state, he allowed a number of months to go by so that the color would come back to their cheeks. Quite literally. Lashon, the language is, she'yachzor lahem hoyd pneihem, that the color would come back to their cheek, it would come to themselves. And that's why we emphasize B'chodesh HaShlishi, because the Jewish people were not in a state to receive the Torah when they first left Mitzrayim. Now what's really interesting is that the Or HaChaim says something similar, but totally different. He says that the Jewish people in the land of Mitzrayim had become sunken in moral and spiritual deprivation. And they were impure. And they had to be purified before they would get the Torah. And he says that took time. It took time for the Jewish people to become purified, to become maybe cleansed of the Egypt or slave-like syndrome that had remained with them, the residual effect of their experiences in Mitzrayim. And that's why it says, B'chodesh HaShlishi, Letzeis B'nei Yisrael, they were going out of Mitzrayim, transcending the limitations which had in large measure inhibited their spirituality, their neshama, obscured their true selves. So now that they've come out of their shell a little bit, now that they developed a little bit, they get back to themselves. So on then, B'yeim HaZeh, on this day, Bo Midbar Sinai. What's B'yeim HaZeh? So Rashi says like this, B'yeim HaZeh, it doesn't even say which day. If the Torah would have begun with a date and said it was this and this day, And Bayim Hazeh, on that very day, the Jewish people came to the Sinai desert. Okay, I know what Bayim Hazeh means. Bayim Hazeh is emphasizing this day, this date that we just specified. On that exact day, they came to the Sinai desert. But it doesn't really say which day it was. It just says Bachodesh HaShlishi. So Rashi says, well, if it says Bachodesh HaShlishi, and it says Bayom Hazeh, clearly we're talking about the beginning of the month. And therefore, Bayom Hazeh, that would be Berosh Chodesh, the first day when it's possible to identify the third month. Which day would that be? The first day of the month, Rosh Chodesh, Aleph Sivan. However, Rashi adds that even as such, it shouldn't have said Bayom Hazeh, it should have said Bayom Ahu. And Rashi says, Lama hayetzarech lichtev, lehayetzarech lichtev, it should not have said Ela Bayom Ahu. Mao Bayom Hazeh. Bayom Hazeh, Rashi says, the Torah wants us to know something remarkable. On that day when the Jewish people came to the Sinai desert, there was tremendous anticipation. This is what they had been hearing about for months. This is what they've been counting down to for the last 7 weeks almost. And they're finally here. So they were excited about this. Something new, something you wait for. Says Rashi, Mao Bayom Hazeh, Sheyiu Divrei Torah Chadashim, that words of Torah should be new for us each and every day. Ke'ilu hayoyim nitnu. As if they were given to us today. Tzugizunt. Every day should be a Bayom Hazeh. You wake up in the morning, you open a chumash, it's Bayom Hazeh. Imagine if you got an email from God last night. And you knew this email was coming. You're waiting for it. And finally you heard the ding. It's arrived. Your text message is here. Imagine the anticipation that you would be feeling to read what it says. Or a letter arrived, and you're going to open the letter, read the letter now. Obviously, you'd be very excited. So that's how you should feel about the Torah. Every single day, Hashem is giving us the Torah all over again. And therefore, it shouldn't feel like, the same old Torah. We're going to go study something that's been studied for thousands of years. Whatever, it's important, it's meaningful, it's time-worn, it's... No. Bayim Hazeh. It's brand new, it's fresh. Every day, the Torah should be dynamic. That's Rashi's approach to understanding the Bayim Hazeh. So the Bayim Hazeh means Rosh Chodesh. However, and the Sepharna says something very similar, it's the teacher that they came there on Rosh Chodesh, but Rashi can't suffice with that because it sort of said Bayom Hahu. And the fact that it says Bayom Hazeh emphasizes furthermore that the Jewish people are supposed to look at the Torah in a fresh and new and exciting way. The Chizkuni, picking up the thesis of the Balei HaTosfos, which is based, as I said, on the words of Chazal, he says, as soon as they were able, that's when they started getting ready for Matan Torah. They were simply unable before. He says, Bayom Hazeh means until this day, they were still licking their wounds. On this day, they were finally ready and didn't wait a minute. Today they're ready, Bayom Hazeh bo midrasini. As soon as they were ready, Hashem didn't waste any days. All the days leading up to this point, they were all necessary. There were no extra hours of preparation. And Bayom Hazeh, as soon as they got there, okay, then they're ready to receive the Torah at Mount Sinai. Now in verse 2, it's almost like we're going back to the beginning of the chapter again. Because the journey to Sinai had to take place before verse 1. It says, Bachodesh HaShlishi, on the third month of going out of Mitzrayim, on this day, Bo Midbar Sinai. Where'd they come from? I don't know. Take a look at the last narrative and you'll see where they came from. But verse 2 kind of goes back and says, Vayisu mirfidim. They traveled from Refidim. Vayavayu Midbar Sinai. They came to Midbar Sinai. Same information we have in verse 1. Only now we have the original point of departure. And here, the Torah adds details of the encampment. Vayachanu b'midbar. They encamped in the desert. Vayichan sham Yisrael, and Israel singularly camped, Vayichan is singular, neged ahar, right against the mountain. Another verse that demands elucidation. There's a lot of style, but it doesn't seem like much substance. What did we learn in verse 2 that we didn't know in verse 1? We know they came to Midbar Sinai. Okay, it says that. Bo Midbar Sinai. In other words, the real information, without any commentary, the real information that we can glean on a very, very simple, elementary level, from verse 1 is three words. Bo Midbar Sinai. That's what verse 1 is about. They came to Midbar Sinai. So I said, well, there's a lot of interesting and important details, and come, you should know that it was B'chedesh HaShlishi, which day of the month, and which month, and it was Litzais from the going out of B'nai Yisrael Mitzrayim, and it was B'yem HaZeh. Okay, all important information. But essentially, what we learn here is, what we know on a simple level, is they came to Midbar Sinai. And then when you go take a look at verse 2, what did you learn here that you didn't know before? Vayisu Mirfidim. Okay, just like go back a few pages. Go to before the Yisro narrative. You'll find out where they left from. And then it says, Vayavo Midbar Sinai. That's exactly what it says in verse 1. Bo Midbar Sinai. Instead of Bo, Vayavo. It says, Vayachnu Ba Midbar. Well, obviously, they had to break camp. They weren't like floating in the air. Where were they breaking camp? Wherever they came to. So, what you say, Vayachnu Sham? Vayachnu Ba Midbar? Of course, Vayachnu Ba Midbar. Where else would they camp? And then after telling us Vayachanu Bamidbar, then it says Vayichan Sham. It goes from the plural to the singular, and it speaks about Neged Ahar. So obviously, this requires elucidation. Rashi begins the process by transcribing the first words of the pasuk Vayisu Mirfidim, and he asks, Lomo Hutzrach Lachzer Ulafarish Mehechan Naso. Why does the Torah have to come and repeat the same exact information, which is seemingly entirely superfluous? We've arrived. We came. This is the date. You know, we left so-and-so, this other place, and then we arrived. You just said you arrived. I'll figure out where you came from. Why do you have to emphasize where you left from if we already arrived? And we already have that information. Like, it seems entirely unnecessary. The Torah repeating itself, adding information which it has already conveyed for seemingly no purpose. V'alei kevar kosov. It already said earlier. If you go back to chapter 17, right in the beginning, you'll find out. Sheberefidim hayuchaynim. The last time we heard of their coordinates, it was Refidim. We don't know of any other journeys. Well, then common logic dictates, if the last time we found them was in this place, and now they show up here, we can understand that they left this place and came here. It's really not necessary for us to speak about where they left from. Biyadua, it is known or self-understood, shemisham naso. From where else would they have set forth? Elo, rather, Rashi says, the reason that the Torah couches the narrative in these terms is lahakish nisiyosan mirafidim. It's in order to juxtapose the leaving, the departure from Refidim, with the arrival of Mount Sinai. No, juxtaposition. What's the juxtaposition? Why does the Torah want to compare or create a parallel between the departure and the arrival? So the answer is, Ma biyason lemidbar Sinai b'tshuva, just as they arrived at Midbar Sinai, doing tshuva with a sense of regret for what they've done in the past and a sense of profound new commitment for the future. That's how they came to Midbar Sinai. Afnes yosam mirafidim, their leaving of Refidim was also b'tshuva, was also in a state of tshuva. So, if the plane takes off late, in all likelihood you're going to arrive late. Not necessarily, though. I can tell you from experience, so I can do this flight by, you know, my eyes closed already, that if you take off late from LaGuardia, let me rephrase that, you always take off late from LaGuardia. They factor that in. I don't know how they do this, but even when they leave late, they'll still sometimes come on time. I think they have like a secondary route, or there's a way they can somehow accelerate the engines. I don't know what they do, but they'll even tell you sometimes, we made up the extra time. Well, why can't you do that to begin with then? Why would you have to fly us more slowly and then fly us more? I don't know the answer to that question. But I know that leaving late does not necessarily mean arriving late. I also have learned the hard way that leaving on time does not necessarily mean we will land on time. It's not a given. It's not a given. Stuff happens. You know, I've circled the airport before, more than once. Okay. So it's not necessarily so simple to say that the journey or the way we left is the way we're going to arrive. It's not necessary. A lot of things can happen, as they say, in flight. In the journey, things can happen. They could have left Rafidim one way. They could have left Rafidim grumbling, kvetching, as they most often did. And by the time they got to Midbar Sinai, they would have had like a new perspective on things. Cleaned up their act. So the Torah wants you to know that it was not only the arrival at Sinai that was in a high-minded and kind of refocused fashion, but here, even the journey, even the departure, was in like fashion. They left Rafidim regretting their behavior. They said, that was not right. We can't do that again. We're getting close to the Har Sinai. We need to clean up our act. And therefore, the Torah wants you to know that. The Torah wants you to understand that their arrival in Rafidim was much like, their arrival in Sinai, pardon me, was much like their departure. From when they left Rafidim, already they were in a new state of mind. Already they looked at things different. Which will help us appreciate what we're going to learn in a moment. Because if they left Rafidim with a sense of renewal and return, with a sense of regret and recommitment, then when they arrived at Sinai, they already arrived in an elevated state. So by the time they came Vayachanu Bamidbar, by the time they came to the Midbar, had they come to Har Sinai? Not mumbling and grumbling. They came to Har Sinai anticipating, excited and ready to receive the Torah. And yet, the Torah describes first Vayachanu Bamidbar, and then it says Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar. Two things. First, they camped, and we use the plural expression. And then it says, and he camped. And he camped. Yisrael Neged Ahar. So Rashi tells us the following. Vayichan Sham Yisrael. Rashi notes that in this specific instance, it speaks in the singular tense, and it means Ki Ish Echad Belev Echad. They came like one person with one heart. Aval Sha'ar Chanuyes. But the other encampments, B'tarumais U'B'machlekes. All the other encampments were with kvetching, complaining, and downright divisiveness. Now it's interesting to note that Rashi's approach here, although it's taken directly from our sages, is slightly altered from the words in the Mechilta, and we'll get to that in a minute. But many of the other Mefarshim deal with this in a different fashion. For example, Ramban says that there were two classes of Jewish people. I could see your eyebrows going up, two classes of Jewish people. Who are the second class Jews? Don't we say that all Jews are equal? I always say that around Mount Sinai, there were no denominations.
What about Erev Rav?
Ah, very good, Ami, the Erev Rav. So Ramban says that there was a difference between the Erev Rav and the rest of the Jewish people. And so there was Vayachanu Bamidbar, that refers to the Erev Rav, the motley crew of people who attached themselves, the opportunists who attached themselves to the Jewish people on the way out to Moshe Rabbeinu, kindly and generously accepted, and perhaps it wasn't such a good idea, as we'll find that later on, they become the instigators and the prime architects of the golden calf. And then there's Yisrael themselves. The Jewish people themselves, they were anticipating the giving of the Torah in a whole different way. Rabbeinu Bachaya goes so far as to suggest that verse 2 incorporates a double movement. They arrived, and then they arrived. First they camped, and then the next day they said, let's get closer. They somehow knew that's the mountain. So they, whilst originally they camped in a desert, on second approach, on the next day they said, let's go closer to the mountain. And then the second time they actually camped around the mountain, which is a very interesting approach of Rabbeinu Bachaya, because the Torah speaks about two encampments, but it doesn't say they traveled. It doesn't say they moved. Rashi rejects that, clearly out of hand, because the pasuk says, Vayachanu Bamidbar Vayichan Sham. It says they camped in a desert, Vayichan Sham. They camped there. It's on a level of simple, straightforward pshutus holmik, it's very hard to say that. Ramban's words doesn't say anything about Erev Rav and Yisrael. Doesn't say that. It sounds like they're doing this together, Vayachanu, and then Vayichan Sham. So this makes us ask the question. You know, Ibn Ezra divides between the leadership and between the ordinary people. Rashi doesn't accept, he rejects all that, and he says that the Jewish people came to the Har Sinai, but the Torah re-describes the camping to let you know that it was Ki'ish Echad B'Lev Echad. What's the meaning of Neged Ahar? Rashi says L'Mizrachi. This indicates that they camped on the easterly side of the mountain, and he says, Chol Makim Shata Meitzin Neged, wherever you find the word of corresponding to, or literally against, It means panim lemizrach. It means that they're referring to the easterly direction. And since the sun rises in the east, that's often called the face, the horizon. Looking out to the horizon and looking out to the east. So they were encamped on the easterly side of the mountain. So this needs to be understood. Clearly there's a business of the Jewish people camping around the mountain in a unique way. Clearly, to begin with, they came in a refocused, in a recommitted fashion. The journey started differently, not only ended differently, but it seems that the journey not only started differently, it was a different kind of journey, but the arrival was a different kind of arrival, and the ultimate encampment was in a totally different fashion. Namely, with the singular intent of Ki'ish Echad B'Lev Echad. So let's take a look now in the Birim book. The Rebbe analyzes the specific comment of Rashi. And he notes that what Rashi says is actually significantly different from the source of Rashi, from the words of our sages. And we're going to talk about the reason for that. So let's go to page Samach Dalet, pardon me. Page Samach Dalet, Simen Yud Aleph. The Rebbe here notes, Mekoyram shel divrei Rashi, the origin, the source of the words of Rashi, is in the Mechilta. The Mechilta, which comes from the Hebrew terminology of kol, has everything. This is the incorporation of all the Midrashic teachings that's associated with the first and second books of the Torah, called Mechilta. That's what the it's like the forerunner even of Medrash Rabbah. The Mechilta was from the time of our sages, earlier even in the Mishnah. On the book of Bereshit and Shemot, it's called Mechilta. On the book of Vayikra, it's called Safra. And the book of Bamidbar and Dvarim, it's called Sefri. So Rashi's words are based on the Mechilta. And here is the quote, the actual quote from the Mechilta. Remember, Rashi's commentary starts, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Ki Ishachad B'Lev Echad. They camped, but it really says he camped. He says, one person, one heart. But the other encampments, the Tarumais Ubamachlaikis. The Mechilta says, quote, Kol Mokaim Hu Oimer Vayisu Vayachanu. Whenever the Jewish people camped, it uses the plural tense. Vayisu they traveled. Vayachanu they camped. And Noisim Bemachlaikis Vachainim Bemachlaikis. It means that their journey was a divisive one and their encampment was divisive. There was always disparate opinions, and there was always kvetching, yelling, screaming, always issues. It was never a quiet landing. And for that matter, it was never a quiet takeoff. The journey was tumultuous, and the arrival was rambunctious. Aval kan, but here, hushvu lev echad. Everybody's heart became equal. There was this great equalizer. Their hearts beat in unison. They had the same intent, the same desire, the same passion, the same focus. Okay, it sounds very similar. That's the words, the source of Rashi is the Mechilta. The Rebbe says there's a huge difference between the words of Rashi and the Mechilta. Difference number one. The Mechilta mentions the fact that the other journeys were always divisive. It says, what was the unusual journey? What was the exception? This journey was the exception. Everywhere, this is the way it always is. Always divisive. It's always contentious. Here it was different. Mikach mashma, from here it seems that from the Mechilta's perspective, the natural state of things is one of divisiveness. Yeah, issues. It's going to be issues. Why do you say that? Trust me. It's going to have to be issues. It's the way it is. One Jew, three opinions. I'm arguing with myself even. It's going to have to be that way. But the difference, the chiddush, the novelty is here something remarkable unfolded. Rashi, on the other hand, starts off his commentary with Vayichan ki ish echad b'lev echad. They came as one person, one heart. Lakla achran became only after, as Rashi says. By the way, it wasn't like this all the time. It wasn't like you know that the rest of the time there was lots of contention. So from the fact that Rashi kind of adds everywhere else it was different, it's almost as if Rashi seems to say that unity is the natural state of things, or the way things should have been. It's like, things went right this time. You know it never went right again. You know there was always issues afterwards. But it was okay. This time it went right. So it's actually the exact opposite of the Mechilta. The Mechilta is telling me it was always troublesome, but this time was the exception. Rashi's telling me, oh yeah, safe landing, smooth. Don't ask about the rest of the times. But in other words, the other times are the exception, and this seems to be almost the norm. Number two, the Mechilta teaches us that the other ones, the other encampments, were divisive, and that's because it says Vayisu Vayachnu B'Loshan Rabin, as if it should have said Vayichan, but it doesn't say Vayichan, it says Vayisu Vayachnu. But from Rashi's words are, the exception is not the Vayisu Vayachnu, the exception is not the plural tense elsewhere, the exception is the singular tense here. Here it says Vayichan Sham Yisrael. Rashi transcribes the words Vayichan. In other words, it's only here that it was Ki'ish Achad B'Lev Achad. By the other places, we didn't have that kind of unity. So the Rebbe suggests that Rashi's approach is actually different from the Mechilta. Although he takes his ideas from the Mechilta, Rashi filters it through a different screen of diffusion. Rashi sees it differently. Listen carefully. Kavanas HaMechilta. When the Mechilta says Machlaikis, it does not mean a fight. It does not mean an argument. What does it mean? It means opinions. Disparate opinions. Different approaches. It's always like that. That's normal. If you have everybody agreeing, something's wrong. Either we live in a communist state, or something went wrong somehow. There's no such thing as a free election held and one candidate gets all the votes. It doesn't happen such that you can have a landslide. You can't have no dissent. You can't have no difference of opinion. There's always going to be a difference of opinion. The Matziv Tivi, the natural thing is that people are created that way. As the famous Gemara Meseches Brachas, and it's brought down in Meseches Sanhedrin, that Ein Deyaseim Shaveis, people don't think in a uniform fashion. There's a unique way of thinking. That's just the way it is. So God created us. As we have different eyes and different fingerprints, we have different opinions, different approaches. The Mechilta understands that Vayisu Vayachnu, that the encampments, which are described in the plural tense of Shabbalash and Rabbim, that is to say, Shabnei Yisrael, Nogu, Kederach, Hanoshim, Rabbim, they behaved like a group of people. And groups of people naturally always will have different opinions. As one wise person once said, the Jewish people are just like everybody else, only a little more so. So whenever you have a group of people, you'll have opinions. You have Jewish people, a little more so. More opinions. But that's the way it is.
Is there an alternative that maybe the division here is between Israel and Erev Rav? In other words, it wants to emphasize...
Rashi doesn't draw distinctions here between Yisrael and Erev Rav. Ramban takes that approach. Rashi doesn't take that approach at all. He doesn't introduce the whole Erev Rav paradigm here. So according to that approach, when they came to Midbar Sinai and they were unified, what was the exception? The norm is having different opinions. What's the exception? The exception is when we showed up with exactly the same opinion, or our hearts beating in unison with the same ideas. That's an exception. Rashi, however, takes a different approach. He understood the words machlokes to mean the way it actually is in the Torah. They didn't just come with differences of opinions. If you read the story, you'll find out that we didn't just have different opinions. We were actually contentious. We actually made issues, and we were fighting. Either with each other, we finished fighting with each other, we fought with Moshe. If that wasn't good enough, we fought with God too. We fought with everybody. It's like, good morning, who can we fight with today? And this is how it was. And Rashi says that machlokes, unfortunately, this is always the way. There was ma'avakim and merivot shel mamash. There was these wrestling matches and fights and issues. Huge contention. It doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. What Moshe would say, Yidalach, why? And we would say, ha ha ha, why? What do you mean? We have to fight. This wasn't a norm. We're not talking about a typical way. The Jewish people were atypical. So we can't learn from Vayisu Vayachnu that they were divisive. Those words don't tell us anything. Vayisu Vayachnu don't tell us that the people were divisive. That's simply the plural tense. What we can learn from is the fact that the Torah would depart from its usual expression and here say Vayichan Sham Yisrael, singular. So the fact that the Torah makes the trouble to tell you that there was a Vayichan, singular here, that singles this out. This is the exception. This was unusual. And this is telling us that something extraordinary unfolded over here, that although elsewhere they were always fighting, here the fights had dissipated. And this all begins with the journey. They left with a new approach. And they left with a new attitude. They arrived with a new attitude. And that continued to develop. As they got closer and closer to the mountain, as they got closer to Har Sinai, Vayachanu Bamidbar, and when they came around the mountain to actually receive the Torah, then it was Vayichan Sham Yisrael. So everybody asked the question, how can we create more Jewish unity? What's the answer? Don't reinvent the wheel. Just focus on the Torah. The only thing that will ever unite us is the Torah. Otherwise, we'll be just like everybody else, only a little more so. We'll have contentions, we'll have issues, we'll have fights. There will always be a pluralism, one that's even unhealthy. The only way we can ever find a singular focus, with other than Tzaras Chas V'Shalom, is if we have a focus on the Torah. The Torah can and should unite us, and Bezrat Hashem, out of a little more unity, we will together merit the coming of Mashiach, at which time there will be a whole new giving of Torah. The Heder will be a main one.